So today, I'd like to share with you one sutta from Samyutta Nikaya 47 and sutta number 19. And here, in this sutta, Buddha tells a story. He said that a monk, once in the past, an acrobat set up his bamboo pole and addressed his apprentice thus, "Come, dear my student, climb the bamboo pole and stand on my shoulders." Having then the apprentice follow what the teacher instructed him and climb up the bamboo pole and stood on the teacher's shoulder. And the teacher said to the student, you protect me, my dear, and I shall protect you. Thus guarded by one another, protected by one another, we will display our skills and get down safely from the bamboo pole. And however, the student answered. He said that this is not the right way. Teacher, you protect yourself, and I shall protect myself. Thus, each self-guarded and self-protected, we will display our skills and get down safely from the bamboo pole. And Buddha said that this is the right view. This is the right way. That is the method here, there. You protect yourself, I protect myself. This is the right way. And it's just as the student said to the teacher, "I will protect myself, because thus should be establishment of mindfulness be practiced. I will protect others, because thus should the establishment of mindfulness be practiced. Protecting oneself, because one protects others. Protecting others, one protects oneself." Okay? This is something new for you. And how is it because that by protecting oneself, one protects others? This is a question we want to know. And Buddha said, by the pursuit, development and cultivation of the meditation. It is in such a way that by protecting oneself, one protects others. So how by cultivating meditation, one protects oneself and protects others? So this is the main thing we want to discuss here. And secondly, later we will discuss how by protecting others, one protects oneself. So we come to first point first. By protecting oneself, one protects others. It's true development of meditation. However, before we come to the development of meditation, all of us know, before meditate, we have to purify our morality first, right? So first, we undertake the training of morality for the purpose of protecting oneself and protecting others. For example, we undertake the precept of non-killing, undertake the precept of not taking what is not given. So by taking this precept, we protect ourselves. Otherwise, if we kill other people or we steal other people's property, or we perform sexual misconduct with other people's son and daughter, and we will be caught. We will be caught and sent to jail. Therefore, we are not protecting ourselves, right? So by undertaking the precepts first, we protect ourselves. At the same time, we protect others from being killed. We protect others' property from being stolen. We protect other people from being raped and so on. And we are not only protecting by undertake the precepts, we are not only protecting oneself in this very life. As a Buddhist, we also understand we will have, definitely will have next life. So by undertake this precept, we protect, not only protect ourselves in this very life, as well as we protect ourselves in the future life. By the law of karma, by the operating of law of karma. So this is first, we protect ourselves by way of ethical morality. And at the same time, we protect others from being harmed. And secondly, the best protection is through meditation. And here Buddha said, it's by development and cultivation of four foundations of mindfulness. We have four foundations of mindfulness. First is body contemplation, kaya nupasana satipatthana. So by constantly contemplate, let's say, under this body contemplation, there's one meditation subject called 32 parts of the body. We recollect head hair, body hair, nail, teeth, skin, and all the organs inside the body to see its impurities. So we see the impurity of the body again and again, again and again. This is called body contemplation. Kaya, we call 32 parts, kodasa. And if a yogi, if a practitioner keep on contemplating his body as impure, 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 then he protect himself from the arising of lustful thoughts. You know, as a female and male, there's a strong attraction within female and male. So the possibility to have sexual misconduct is always open. But a yogi who keep on contemplating by practicing body contemplation, by seeing his own body as impure, as well as the other party, opposite sex body is also impure, then gradually he overcome his lustful thoughts. He loses interest in sexual misconduct, in any sexual conduct. In this way, he protects himself from any unwholesome sexual misconduct, and he protects others as well. This is called by way of development, constant development of body contemplation. And under the four foundations of mindfulness, there's another subject called contemplation of mind. All our defilements, all our unwholesome skill, all our unwholesome bodily action and verbal action come from the mind, especially from the three roots of lobha, dosa, moha, greed, hatred and delusion, right? So if you apply constantly practice these four foundations of mindfulness, contemplation of mind, so when a state of greed arises in your mind and you are mindful of it, you know, greed has arisen in me. Then mindful of the arising of greed, then contemplate it as vanishing, vanishing, passing away, gone, impermanent, anicca, anicca. Then through the sharpness of your wisdom, you will see that mental state of greed vanishes, gone, disappear from the mind. And when that greed state of mind disappeared from your mind, then you will not perform bodily actions that hurts yourself as well as that hurts others. So in this way, you protect yourself. At the same time, you protect others. Similarly, when the anger state arises in the mind, if we are mindful enough, then we catch the mind, the anger state of the mind, and contemplate it as impermanent, impermanent, vanishing, vanishing. By contemplate it, when we contemplate vanishing, vanishing, it's not a labeling. Don't think that it is labeling, like metta, you know. May I be happy? Initially, you think it's labeling, very mechanical recitation. So you get very bored. No. Initially, it appears like labeling. But as your meditation goes deeper, it works fantastically, amazingly. So at the same way, if you contemplate the anger state as vanishing, vanishing, and try to pay attention to its disappearance, you are not only label it like vanishing, vanishing, no. When you label it as, or when you note it as vanishing, vanishing, you are paying attention to see it's passing away. So your focus is not on labeling. Your focus is on trying to see it's passing away. Only then your labeling works well. You don't label passing away, but you don't see the actual passing away of the anger. So if you constant practice in this way, the anger arise, contemplate it, vanishing, vanishing, try to see its passing away, actual passing away, then you will see anger disappear in the mind. When the anger disappear in the mind, then you will not perform bodily unwholesome action as well as verbally unwholesome action. Then you protect yourself. You protect yourself from unwholesome karma. And you also protect others from being harmed. Therefore, Buddha say, it's through this development and cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness, you protect yourself as well as you protect others. So whatever mental state that arises in your mind, fear also, worry, some more. What mental state you encounter more often in your life? Sorrow, okay? So when sorrow arises, you must be mindful enough to catch it. Oh, the mind is in sorrow state. Then take it as an object. Take the sorrow as object. Then contemplate it as vanishing, vanishing. Buddha say from his first enlightenment until his passing away, he says, Sabbe sankhara anicca. All formations are impermanent. So sorrow is also formation. It is also impermanent. But why you didn't see is passing away? Why it come up so often and obsessed your mind? Why? Why? No answer? Whether it's pleasant or unpleasant is still impermanent, right? Why sorrow obsess our mind so strongly? Because we identify it as myself. We identify the sorrow state as mine, belong to me. And we think that sorrow as myself, not only belong to me, also as myself. So when you grasp it as myself, just I grasp this piece of paper as myself, I don't want to let go of it. So if I don't want to let go of my hand, how can this thing go away from my hand? It will always follow me, right? Unless I let go. When I let go, then it goes away from my hand. Then how can I let go? First, by contemplating, vanishing, and see its actual passing away. Secondly, we identify it. We do not identify it as myself. We just see as cause and effect, phenomena. Sorrow arises because of cause. When a cause is there, sorrow state is there. So it's not myself. It's just an effect of a cause. So if you can keep on contemplating in this way, it's just an effect of a cause, not myself, not mine, as an effect of cause, not I, not myself, then you are let go. You are let go. You are letting go of this sorrow state. Same thing. Happiness, you also have to let go. If you do not let go happiness, then may I ask you, is happiness permanent or impermanent? Impermanent. So we tend to use sorrow as what? Same thing. Even sorrow, happiness, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, every phenomena have to be contemplated in the same way. Suppose when you feel happiness and you do not contemplate happiness as impermanent, as passing away, and when you do not contemplate happiness as impermanent, you develop attachment to it, right? Right? So when you develop attachment to it, and when that happiness comes to cessation, how do you feel? Sorrow again. The back turn to sorrow again. Therefore, but if you contemplated it, happiness as impermanent, vanishing, it will soon pass away. And when that happiness actually passes away, you feel equanimous. Why? Because I already know it will pass away. Then you feel equanimous. Otherwise, happiness passes away, you become sorrow again. Then another happiness comes, happy again, passes away, sorrow again. And your life is always up and down. You never have stability of the mind. Your mind is always emotional, at emotional state. Then how the Dhamma help you? You keep all the question after my talk, okay? So, in this way, whatever mental state, especially defilements, anger, jealousy, competition, some more fear. Everybody experience a fear. Fear, then depression, greed, cruelty, some more. All the defilements that come from the mind is trying to hurt yourself. Trying to push yourself to perform unwholesome skill or unwholesome karma if you are not mindful of your mental state, right? So if you follow after your defilements, your unwholesome state of the mind, then you perform bodily karma. You hurt yourself in this very life and you pave the way to unwholesome rebirth in the future. At the same time, the unwholesome state of the mind, once you perform it through physical and verbal action, you hurt another person. And when you hurt another person, sometimes people will take revenge. They don't. Most people uncultivated mind. When they are hurt, they won't simply take it easy. They will find a chance to take revenge. Then, when he take revenge, then you will be hurt again. There's no end to it, right? Therefore, Buddha say, by constantly develop and pursuit and cultivate meditation again and again, you protect yourself and you protect others. I just try to explain to you why by protecting oneself, you protect others. Okay. Then we go to the second one, because today my time is very short. Otherwise, I can explain to you how to practice this contemplation of mind in detail. I have to wait for translator to speak in Chinese as well, so I must give him some time. Then the second question the Buddha said, and how is it, bhikkhus, that by protecting others, one protects oneself? Just now is protecting oneself, you protect others. But now you also must. And now when we protect others, we also protect ourselves. And how Buddha said, by patience, khanti, by harmlessness, by loving kindness, and by sympathy, compassion. It's in such a way that by protecting others, one protects oneself. How? Let me give you an example. How by patience we protect others and protect oneself? During Buddha's time, one day after Vasa, usually after Vasa, during Vasa, all the monks will come and stay in the temple. Then after Vasa, most of the monks will leave. So Venerable Sariputta also took leave from Buddha. And before he take leave, other monks also want to take leave from Venerable Sariputta. And to dismiss the monks, Venerable Sariputta call the name, call their personal name, their family names. So among the group of bhikkhu, there was a monk where Venerable Sariputta was not so familiar with. And this monk developed a strong desire that Venerable Sariputta should call his name, should address him by his family names to show the closeness with Venerable Sariputta. But however, because Venerable Sariputta did not know him well, so he did not address him by his family name. And also, at that time, he feel very unhappy already. He feel very unhappy. And at the same time, after addressing all the monks and a hem of Venerable Sariputta's robe brushed again this monk accidentally, and this monk was feel offended, plus initially he already feel very unhappy towards Venerable Sariputta, and by this second incident then he bear a grudge. His mind become very upset, angry, and trying to and bear a grudge. So if such thing happened to you, what's the remedy? What's the medicine to cure your mental state? I have just shared with you just now. Note your mind, right? Contemplate your mind. Okay, depression, anger, grudge. Contemplate vanishing, passing away, not myself, cause and effect. Then when you really see this unwholesome state of the mind passing away, then the mind return to its equanimous. Then he will not perform any unwholesome verbal speech, unwholesome verbal action or unwholesome bodily action, right? Okay. Unfortunately, this monk did not know how to contemplate the mind. He did not know how to contemplate the mind. Then he keep on cherish this unwholesome thought. Then finally, he cannot stand his unwholesome thought. And he reported to the Buddha. He said that, "Oh Lord, Venerable Sariputta thought he himself as chief disciple. So he struck me with a blow without asking for forgiveness. From this instance, you can see, once you cannot control your unwholesome thought, you will definitely, we will definitely commit unwholesome verbal or body action. Regardless whether you are a layperson, or you are a monk, or you are a nun. So long we cannot guard our mind, we are going to perform unwholesome verbal action and unwholesome bodily action. So this happened to this monk. So this monk accused Venerable Sariputta in front of the Buddha. He is none other than a fool, right? Because everybody knows Venerable Sariputta is Arahant. How can Arahant struck a person without asking for forgiveness? Not to say asking for forgiveness. How can an Arahant strike another person? This is violent. Not possible. So this monk is causing trouble for himself. So he reported to the Buddha. And you know, Buddha is just a wise judge. He don't say that. Nonsense. How can Venerable Sariputta strike you? Buddha never said like that. Okay, call Venerable Sariputta to come here. As a judge, you listen to both sides, right? So he called Venerable Sariputta to come. When the news spread out, Venerable Ananda, Venerable Mongalana are very happy. Then they go around, these two persons go around all the dwelling place and call all the monks, please come. Today, Venerable Sariputta is going to roar a lion roar. So everybody please come to listen to Venerable Sariputta's speech. Because they know Venerable Sariputta cannot do such thing. So then everybody come, gather together. Then Venerable Sariputta here and the accused monk is here. Then Buddha asked, Venerable Sariputta, this monk said that you struck him with a blow without asking for forgiveness. And if ordinary person will say, no, I never do like that. But Venerable Sariputta is famous for his patience, gentle, loving kindness. He never say, he did not deny, he did not say, no, I did not do. He only said that, how can a person who always keep his mind on the body, he always contemplate body contemplation, kaya nupasana satipatthana, whose mindfulness is always stay with the body. So how can such a person strike another person without asking for forgiveness? He's trying to convey a message. I am mindful all the time. My mind, my attention is always stay with my body. I have no time to strike another person. No, my mindfulness is always stay with my body. So how can I do such thing? And how can I do such thing if I do without asking for forgiveness? So anyway, what he want to say is a mindful person is unable to do such thing. Then he compare himself. First, he compare his own virtues like a great earth. Patawi. He said, like a great earth, when somebody throw the flowers beautiful flowers on top of the earth. The earth did not feel delighted. And when somebody threw urine, feces, rubbish on the earth did not feel repelled. The earth did not repel by or disgusted by these dirty things. Or the earth did not feel delighted by the beautiful things thrown on it. So for a long time, I have developed this measureless loving kindness towards all beings. Then he say he compared his own virtues like earth, like water, like wind, like fire. Then he compares virtues like a bull, an animal bull has horn. A bull with horn cut, tame, and roaming in the street without hurting anyone. Because his bull, his horn already cut, and he is tame already. So whenever this bull goes, he never hurt anyone. And he also compare, he say, he feel very oppressive having this body. He said this body is full of smell, bad smell. So he feel all the time he was very disgusted about his own body. But the lifespan has not exhausted yet. Therefore, he has to bear his found body, smelly body. So he compare his own virtues with 9 similes, 9 examples. So after he roar his lion roar, then this monk feels so shameful about himself, the remorse, regrets. He feels so remorse and regret that he had accused such a noble person who endowed with such virtues. Then he immediately kneeled down in front of Venerable Sariputta and asked for forgiveness. And Buddha said that, Sariputta, please forgive this ignorant person. Otherwise, his head will be split into 7 pieces if you do not forgive him. Then Venerable Sariputta forgive him, and also because he's so humble, he also asked forgiveness from the young monk in case I have offended you unintentionally. You also forgive me. And they are reconciled again. So from this instance, you see how Venerable Sariputta protect others by way of patience. By way of patience, he endure his accusation without fighting back. And by his patience and loving kindness and compassion for this ignorant people, and he protect this man as well. Otherwise, to also get into trouble. So in this way, Buddha say, by protecting others with patience, you protect yourself. Another incident of Venerable Sariputta, because he's so famous for his patience. So his news spread out, like just now the news, he's so patient, spread out to one of the Brahmin. And this Brahmin said that, I don't believe Venerable Sariputta's patience, simply because his patience is not yet tested. Let me test him. Another troublemaker. So one day, when Venerable Sariputta went out for Pindapat, and this Brahmin strike him at the back, strong strike him at the back. And to such extent, Venerable Sariputta never turn back and see who strike me. Not even turn back and see, what are you doing to me? No. Continue walking. You see his patience. You see his mindfulness. when people strike him on the back, he just not unpleasant feeling as unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant feeling as impermanent. Unpleasant feeling vanishing, not myself, cause and effect. He has no time to see who is striking me. He has no time. His mindfulness is so continuous without a gap. Therefore, there's no time for him to ask who's striking me. No. His mindfulness is 100% there and contemplate unpleasant feeling as unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant feeling, vanishing, impermanent. Then gone already, finished. So he can continue working. So impressive. However, this Brahmin saw his patience, endurance, unmoved by this challenge. And he felt very regret. Feel regret and feel very inspired by Venerable Sariputta's special virtues. And he quickly ran after him and kneeled down and asking for forgiveness. And Venerable Sariputta said, no problem, I forgive you. And the Brahmin said that, if you forgive me, please accept my offering of food. You go to my house, I want to offer food to you, if you really forgive me. Venerable Sariputta, in order to spare his unpleasant feeling or remorse, okay, I will accept your food. So Venerable Sariputta followed him to his house, accept the food. When he came out from the house, a group of people holding a wood stand in front of the house. And Venerable Sariputta saw, what happened to all of you? Why you all hold a stick and wood? And they answered that, we want to beat the man who strike you. Because how can this person strike my respectable teacher and such a virtuous person? No, we want to strike him back. Then Venerable Sariputta said that, did he strike you or strike me? They said that, Venerable Sir, they strike you, not me. Then I have already forgive him. What you all want to do? Oh, they say, oh, okay. Then go away, go back home. So Venerable Sariputta asked them to leave. So by his patience, you see, by Venerable Sariputta's patience, loving kindness and compassion, he protects others. Right? And also he protects himself from performing unwholesome karma. If ordinary person, if they take revenge, then both of them are harmed. Neither one will be protected. So by patience, you protect others and you also protect yourself from performing unwholesome karma. If you without patience, you're performing unwholesome karma. So in this way, Buddha said, by patience, harmlessness, loving kindness and compassion, that one protect others and one protect oneself. Okay, then Buddha said, I will protect myself because thus should the establishment of mindfulness be practiced. I will protect others because thus should the establishment of mindfulness be practiced. Protecting oneself because one protects others. Protecting others, one protects oneself. And lastly, what I want to add one more, that is loving kindness meditation. Like what we have done today, we wish ourselves happy, we wish other people well and happy. In this way, we also protect ourselves and we protect others. Because our mind is always wish other people happy, then how can we harm other people, right? Therefore, so by practicing loving kindness meditation is very direct way of protecting oneself and protecting others. Okay. So today, this is the end of my talk. Any question, then you can ask now. You want to pass them the mic?
I just want to ask about the when we do metta, right?
Mm.
This morning, Sally said that there will be happiness. So is that happiness different from the normal happiness that you mentioned is also another perception? The feeling.
What type of other happiness? Example?
The normal happiness in our daily life is there's always up and down.
Mm.
Yeah. So that is feeling, okay. Right?
Mm.
But I think, is it in metta when do that kind of happiness is a different?
Yes, of course. In our normal life, that type of happiness is associated with a lot of attachment. Not so pure as metta. That's why that type of happiness in worry life, up and down, the happiness, that type of happiness cannot lead you to jhana. Because it's not pure, impure. But this loving kindness meditation, the happiness come from loving kindness meditation is pure. Pure, without attachment. Therefore, can lead to jhana. This is the difference. It's very much more superior.
Continue with her question. Does it mean that the metta happiness is also impermanent?
Of course. Of course. Everything is impermanent except Nibbana. But if you do not contemplate impermanent, it lasts longer. When you contemplate impermanent, you see it passing away faster. Therefore, when a person enters into metta bhavana, let's say metta bhavana, if they attain first jhana, second jhana, third jhana happiness very strong. So if he want to proceed to vipassana after metta jhana, so after he emerged from the metta jhana, so he will contemplate that happiness as impermanent, not myself. That happiness is produced by metta, it's not a self. It's an effect of the metta. Therefore, it's impermanent. It's conditional. So this yogi will contemplate impermanent of that happiness. Then the vipassana insight will arise. He will see the impermanent of the happiness, the impermanent of the jhana factors. Only then his vipassana insight will become more and more matured. Okay. Any other question? Okay, here there's one question here in Chinese. 我有一个问题想不通。 是这样，我已把我从小到大的不快乐、伤心事已放掉了很多年了。每次我想到，我会用唱歌或念一句佛号。 还有些事情，我会不要看，当作不知道，就不要去拿来烦，就是一天过每一天。法师，我昨天来到这边，又听到静下来时，是要去想把我们心里不好的事全想出来。我昨天来到这边，又听到静下来时。 是要去想把我们心里不好的事全想出来，我真是不明白，静下来是要怎样做？因为我对佛是不会的。因为我对佛理是不会的。OK，这些事呢，你。 我们心中一些不愉快的事情呢，我们是想暂时把它放掉，later I will explain in English 我们把暂时把它放掉，但是呢，它并没有真正的从心中去掉的，它只是被压制着，被压制着。那当我们的心静下来的时候呢，那些被压制、长期被压制下来的烦恼啊。 或者伤心的事情又再次的浮现上来，有时候我们忙的时候，我们没有时间去想伤心的事，并不是那已经过去了，是我们暂时把它压制住。那心一静下来，它又浮上来了。所以这种压制呢，不是一个好办法，不是一种好办法。最好的办法呢，你应该对治它的因， 是什么事情让你这个伤心，把那个因找出来，然后对着那个因，当那个因呢被去除呢，这些苦这些果啊，伤心就是一个果来的，就会永远的被去除掉，它就不会再浮上来了。好，那心静下来，静下来是要怎么做呢？静下来呢，就是要把心静下来，就是你的心要守住一个目标。比如说，如果你是念佛号的，你就念嘛，不脱不脱，好像泰国他们就一边呼吸就不脱不脱不脱，一直念佛号。当你的心一直守住佛号的时候，心就会静下来了。那你的心没有守住什么东西的话呢？它的本质就是东想西想的，到处飘荡的，这样的心呢带来更大的烦恼。因为他心飘到不高兴的事情，就让你更加不高兴了。心飘到让你伤心的事，就让你更加伤心了。所以呢，要把心静下来呢，是要把心守住一个目标上，比如说佛号啊，或者守住你的呼吸，一直在观吸呼吸呼，或者是守住你的这个慈心，一直在送慈心给自己或者给别人，这样呢才可以把心静下来。So she's trying to ask how can we calm the mind? How to let the mind become? Then I answer her that to let the mind, to calm down the mind, you have to keep your mind, anchor your mind on one meditation subject. The nature of the mind is restless. You must understand. The nature of the mind is very restless. So without angling your mind on one single object, the mind will wander here and there, will think whatever thing you do not want to think, or think whatever thing you want to think. All is surrounded or full of defilements that makes your emotional up and down never come to stabilization. Therefore, to calm the mind is to anchor the mind on one single object, like breathing.Or like metta, one object, may he be happy, may she be happy. Or by reciting Buddha, 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 Buddha. So if your mind can keep, if you can keep your mind on a single object, then all the restless mind, all the restlessness will gradually subside and will not disturb the peace of the mind. Okay.Okay, any other question?
Sally, my question is a follow-up from the question that was asked in Chinese. So the question was, we have unresolved issues which should not be suppressed. One solution is to calm ourselves down, and one way is to...put our attention on the breath, etc. But when we do that, we are not addressing the issue. It's also
temporary
another
suppressed.
Way of.
Yes, yes.
So what will be the next step?
I think this is the question you asked. I thought it's the same person. Two different questions. I think I mentioned in my Chinese answer, you have to find out the cause.You have to find out the cause, the issue, unresolved issue that you have been suppressing for so long time. When the mind is quiet, this issue will come up to the surface of the mind. So this issue is not solved yet. So you got to find out, investigate the cause, the causes of this issue. Why? What caused this issue to come up again and again?What is the main causes? So if you find out the main causes, you should tackle that main causes. Tackle it again and again, again and again, until the causes are gone. Then the issue will disperse, will dissolve. So each person has their own unresolved issue, right? So you got to find out your own one. But in case sometimes we cannot find out the causes, we have to divert our attention first. We divert our attention, for example, all the emotions come up and disturb the mind, and yet we cannot resolve by tackling the causes. Then we avert our attention first. Don't think of it first. Avert our attention to the breath, to the any other meditation subject, or temporarily forget it first. Until through the development of meditation again and again, the mind becomes sharper and sharper, mindfulness and wisdom become stronger, then one day you are able to find out the cause and tackle the cause. By now, if you are unable to find out the cause, or if you find out the cause and yet you don't have the strength, you don't have the mindfulness and wisdom to tackle the cause, right? Then we have to be more skillful to put it aside or avert our attention to other wholesome things first, so that this unwholesome thing will be put aside momentarily. Then we gain a strength through development, then we have more strength to fight with it. Then we can face to face with it directly. Okay, last question. No more? Okay, then we let the translator to speak in Chinese.